Hi, I'm Dan Bjork, and welcome to the Grill Podcast. Today with me is Dave Lemke. And Dave, it's great to be with you again for our 45th season. Not necessarily together, but in the business. And today we're going to talk about planting. We're going to talk about watchouts. I might also say that Dave, with your recent CCA of the Year award, it's really fun to get to talk to you and ask you some questions with your experience. So, first, to plant or not to plant?
So every day we get calls from growers wanting us to have the right answer. And to me, the biggest question is, what's the weather going to be following that planting? You know, this cold imbibition is real. When we stick corn into soils that are not going to warm up, we've seen not disastrous, but mediocre stands. So if we have a good warming forecast, warm, well-drained soils, it's not a big risk to me. I think growers know which fields they should put in first. What I'm telling them is put your fuller season, better emerging ones in first in some of your drier soil.
So what I noticed on my way over here was there were at least two planters out. And it made me think back, to a few years ago. There was one particular year where we were talking about soil temperatures in the mid-50s. And then we had some warm weather coming into the weekend. And it seemed like the individuals that planted that 2 or 3 days before that cold front came in, their stand establishment was better than the individuals that waited and planted right up until the cold rains came and that first drink that the seed took was that cold rain. Now, how would you take a look at that scenario?
So, yeah, obviously every year is different. And from past experience, we're going to realize that when it first takes in nice warm water and gets started evenly, that's when we get the best stand. It's when it goes through a stress immediately after planting, or if it was not warm when it went into the ground and it lays there for a while, that's when we end up with the mediocre stand.
And just for the audience here, where that sound is because we have quite a bit of wind today. And I think what God is doing there is he is emphasizing that this is a key point for Dave. So when you hear that particular sound, note that, pay particular close attention. I was also looking at some of the notes that I made. I'm thinking about watchouts. And when you think about watchouts and this early season watchout, first of all, I think of 2022, and nobody really in Iowa thought that 2022 was going to become the year of tar spot, but it was. For a lot of customers in maybe 2/3 of the state, they're saying, okay, there you're going again about tar spot. But in Northeast Iowa, they had over 25 inches of rain, and they had quite a bit of it in that June period leading into July. And they had some significant challenges. If you're an individual out there and you haven't decided whether you're going to use fungicide or not, what would be some of the factors that you would consider to use fungicide for something specifically like tar spot?
So we do know a lot more about tar spot now. We know it's all the way across Iowa. We know that there are specific hybrids that are a lot more tolerant. We also know that it is the amount of time that that leaf is wet, not necessarily rainfall amounts, but whether it's fog or dew or whatever the environment is, and it doesn't have to be a warm temperature to make it happen, but it's kind of the risk reward. We've got to know, you know, when we have the biggest chance of getting it. And it also is a good reason to invest some money in, for instance, Sky Scout that we're offering, right, to our growers, because I think that's the most sure way to see if it's actually becoming an event. You know, it's going to happen someplace in Iowa. You know, we haven't had much of a winter to do anything as far as insects or diseases. They're pretty much laying there ready to go do their thing, just like they've done every year.
Right. Well, yeah, when I think back to 2022, my first field that I saw with tar spot was over by Hampton, Iowa, and it only really had a couple lesions on the top plants, and that was in the first week of August. We left it and didn't treat it because we wanted to see how it would progress, and by the end of August, the plants were completely senesced. The yield difference was 30-40 bushels, and I think that was the moment that, for me, when looking back to the people that were talking about in Indiana and Illinois when it had occurred a few years before that, that this really was a significant disease, and it really, really can take the corn plant down early. So most of the state, we had tar spot show up late, you know, in September, and everybody said, yeah, you're talking about tar spot, but it was late. But I want everybody to remember this, that tar spot completely inoculated the entire state in 2022.
Yes.
And so we're just waiting for that year. We had 4 years where it's been relatively dry, except in spots. We're waiting for that year where we get that return to normal rainfall, which we will. It could be significant.
Yes.
So 2023, looking at 2023, it was June 7th when I first saw soybean cyst nematodes on roots that I dug up not too far away from here, Dave. What do you think about soybean cyst nematode as a watch out for soybeans in this upcoming season?
So reverting back a little bit to the fall, we did take some cyst counts, took samples, and I think we are poised to have another year where we're going to have huge pressure. We're going to see soybean cysts in our high pH areas, wherever drainage could be an issue. We know they're going to be there. You know, you think about Mother Nature's sure way to get rid of some insects is a deep, hard freeze, sustained freeze, and that didn't happen. So I think anything that we see this year will be somewhat exaggerated because we've had a perfect winter for our pests to survive.
I think cyst nematode is important, and I think God is telling us that with the sound. Do you notice that every time you're making a really key point, it gets there's an announcement that you better listen to this because Dave is telling this. When I talk, it's just quiet. So I think next time, Dave, I'm going to have you host this because I think you've really got this thing figured out. Soybean cyst nematode, my perspective on it, it's been building. Greg Tilke from Iowa State has been telling us that it's been building for a long time. We use the same source of resistance called PI-88788, really since you and I got into agronomy. And so you think about 30 years using the same source of resistance, and we know what's happened with resistance buildup on other aspects of agriculture. It was due to happen.
Yes.
So we've got that. We've got some newer genes, like, well, not new, but as far as amount planted with the Peking, you had some good acres and testing, had some good evaluations. You want to give the group just what you saw with the Peking planted in the area versus the PA88?
So what we saw was a healthier plant. It was obvious, you know, the areas where we have high cyst counts with the PI-88, you can see yellowing. It had a mottled look all year. Where we had the Pekings, they were a more aggressive growing plant. The yield was significantly better, you know, in the neighborhood of 5 to 6 bushel to the acre, you know, and it's kind of one of those things where everybody's going, well, now I'm going to go all Peking, and we have to woe that a little bit because we don't want to lose the peak,
right,
like we did with the PI-88. And I understand there's maybe a couple of other options coming down the pipeline, but we've got to live until we get there. And the best thing to do is to continue to rotate them. And I'm sure we will find different varieties of the PI-88 that will be maybe expressing a little more resistance, but it's all a work in progress. One thing about agriculture is things always change.
They
stay the same.
I know in our plots, we have almost an equal amount of PI-88 to the Peking. And so what we want to do is we want to find the right ones, the highest yielding ones in both categories.
Correct.
And we have some other considerations. I've noticed that it hasn't been spoken a lot about, but it has, Allison Robertson has mentioned some, that Phytophthora root rot seems to be making a comeback a little bit in the last couple of years, and it hasn't been that wet in varieties that just have one particular genetic resistance, the RPS1K. The RPS1K is a gene that they started using in the 80s because we were having some challenges with races shifting from 1 and 2, and the RPS1K gave you like 20 different races. But the one that it didn't give us was race 25, and race 25 can come in really, really hard on that particular genetic. So I'm concerned that if we have wet conditions, we may have diseases come back we haven't thought about for the last 5 years. And in the soils around here, that would be significant.
I agree. I mean, most of our soils in the area that I work are not well drained, and we've gone through 4 dry years, heading into our 4th, I should say. And I'm just afraid of the same thing, that once we get moisture there, that they're going to rear their ugly heads again, and we'll see Phytophthora, Pythium, Rhizoctonia, all of those.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it seems like, you know, we mentioned 22 with tar spot and 23 soybean cyst. It seems like every year there is the big one, and we never know what that big one's going to be. But when it starts in one area, whether it's a disease or an insect, it tends to be the predominant one where you get a lot of the questions are with. And so, you know, moving to insects, man, Dave, the last several years we've seen heavy rootworm pressure on corn. Last year we saw northerns and diapause where guys had rotated and they were still coming back. What do we do for the rootworms, and what are some of the watchouts that you have there with your experience all these years, especially in this area?
So historically, you know, we've depended mostly on traits, which, you know, there are issues with resistance, and now we are layering them with an insecticide, whether it be a dry or a liquid in furrow application. You know, we just continue to try and win the war, killing the egg layers, scout and spray.
Right.
But, you know, to your point with the diapause, yes, we're seeing them in first-year corn. We're seeing them probably as heavy in those fields as we have in continuous corn, because we haven't dedicated the time or the products to trying to maintain a lower number.
Well, that's an insect we've been dealing with for years, and we're going to continue to deal with it. And I like some of your philosophies with layering the different control mechanisms. At our recently conducted Innovation Connector in the Des Moines office, in the question and answer time, we had an individual ask CEO Matt Carstens about gall midge. That was an interesting one, because you think, you know, how many people are even familiar with gall midge? Well, he was over in that Carroll, Iowa area.
Yep.
And so I told him, I answered the question a little bit and then talked to him offline, because it's a really difficult answer. Dave, you've been dealing with this and with some of your clients. What are the concerns about gall midge coming in 2024?
if you have much grass, waterways, terraces, and you found gall midge in it, you know, our experience began about 5 years ago when we had the first calls. I don't know what's going on, but my beans are snapping up, and there's these little orange reddish maggots in that broken off spot. Yields dropped to 20 bushel the acre in some of those really badly affected areas. You know, one of the interns I had at that time, Adam Sliceman, did some work with Aaron Hodgson in Iowa State where we built these traps. It looked like we were going to go catch crabs or something, but we had these wire mesh traps that we were getting the insects in, trying to figure out when that timing was that they were going to actually emerge, because the adult version looks like a mosquito, but it's a fly, and it's not very aggressive, but they fly maybe across the road if you're rotating crops and lay their eggs over there. And so I think the key to this is going to be knowing the heat units, et cetera, when we would actually have those insects flying, and it's probably going to be an insect that we spray the adult to get rid of the egg layers and do it, you know, when you were talking about that June 7th when you saw the first cyst nematodes, it's also the same window that we see a lot of the corn rootworms hatch. I think it's going to be pretty close with the gall midge.
You know, it's interesting with gall midge. Had a chance to do an agronomy presentation at DMAC for a couple classes, and then also on an SSA recognition evening in Lake City just last Friday night. And so to get people's attention with agronomy, my first slide was the gall midge slide with all those orange maggots.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it just to see, hear the noise of the crowd. It's not quite as much as a gasp as when Caitlin Clark hits a 26-foot, you know, a logo shot, but there was an audible gasp from the group seeing that, and they wanted to know what this was. And it's almost like, you know, with some of the challenges that we have, that it's almost hard to recognize the pests that just keep coming in. So that you and I have been agronomists for a long time, and yet from when we first started to now, there's always something new coming in that you haven't seen before that you have to figure out how to manage.
Right. You know, when the good Lord built this planet, the idea was that there'd be something growing on every acre. And so as we handle one set of weeds or insects, you know, the host crops, the way we do manage our acres is going to change the pests that also survive. You know, so one thing certain, change is inevitable.
Yes. And that's going to lead into our final segment. Our first segment was on planting, whether to plant or not. And you and I both know that individuals that are calling up asking us to plant or not are probably going to, regardless of what we say, go out and start planting. There will be some planting ahead of time. I already saw some planters going. So we talked about whether to do that or not, and what some of the challenges might be. We've talked about the watch outs with the insects and the diseases potentially that are there. Final segment is Atlantis. We talk about being really agile, and we talk about doing things at speed so that we can adjust to a changing environment. When you think about the growing season, how when we're trying to apply agility to do that, I'm thinking in terms of, so we've got something, we've planted corn, we've planted soybeans, and they're coming up, and all of a sudden the environment goes from 75 degree days and 50 degree nights, and whether it's late April or May around Mother's Day, you get a front come in, and all of a sudden the temperatures drop, not to freezing, but, you know, into the 40s. Or it rains too much or doesn't rain enough. I'm thinking about our whole push with AcreEdge and some of the products that we have brought with AcreEdge, and one in particular that comes to mind is CropLift, which is a biostimulant to help with abiotic stresses, too cold, too dry, too hot. I'm making a statement, and you can, so I'm not really asking you a question, but I'm just making a statement. Dave, you add your comments. I think it's going to be interesting with the hundreds of thousands of acres of product that we have out with our customers to just see how we're able to show that change. And for those who haven't used the product, they might have the ability and the agility to change their plan to maybe do an application with fungicide at VT on corn or at R1 on soybeans. So a kind of a lengthy comment, but what do you think?
So all the years that I've been working in the field, you know, as long as you have, there's one thing that's certain. No year is going to be identical to the previous one, you know. And so that ability now for us to detect problems, you know, with artificial intelligence, with soil labs, et cetera, you know, as we get more into the microbial thing, you know, a plant feeding itself and everything is speeding up as fast as, you know, the reproduction in right. both corn and soybeans. So I'll never forget a comment that Dr. Fred Belo made years back. You never want to let that plant have a bad day. Mm. And so products like Crop Lift, where you're going to help that plant feed itself more thoroughly, are going to become huge. You know, that to me is the next frontier, because we don't know what we don't know about microbes in the soil and that plant feeding itself. But the one thing we know is that any mineral has to go through the body of a microbe and be excreted in a liquid form for that root to take up mass flow with its water.
Right.
And we can make adjustments now with some of the micros in foliar applications. You know, recent data shows that, you know, they are going to be as important as our macronutrients as far as getting this synergy in what the plant needs for nutrition.
Right. Well, you know, we've gone about 20 minutes, and it's been really fun, Dave, just one agronomist to the other, talking about our experience in the past and going into the year that we have. I think this would be, we need to take this on the road next year and just do the Dan and Dave show, and we just talk about what happened in 2024, and then looking out to 2025 and what we've learned, because we're going to learn a lot about crop lifts and several of the acreage products.
Yes, we will.
So I think we're going to wrap it up. We've talked about planting again. We've talked about the watch outs. We've talked about being agile. Appreciate your time, Dave. It's always fun. You're one of the reasons that I look forward to coming to Landis 2.5 years ago, which seems like it's gone by in 10 minutes. Fun doing these podcasts and trying to give information to our customers. So thanks for watching and listening today. And we'll continue this throughout the season. There'll be virtual videos that we'll put out. We'll do webinars. We'll do whatever we need to keep our clientele informed, because 2024, like all years, is going to be an excellent year. Also, don't forget about 800-GROW, using the 1-800-GROW to talk to experts and get answers very quickly. Obviously, you can get a hold of Dave and I as well. But thanks again, and we'll see you till next time.